Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We have a fantastic guest with us today. Father Joe from Epiphany is with us. We're going to talk a little bit about the French settlers of this area, the Catholic French settlers of kind of the Midwest. So we're going to hop into that. If you missed our show last week, I would encourage you to go back to Apple iTunes or Podbean, or as always, you can download the app for Catholic Spirit Radio and listen to all our old podcasts. Father Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk a little bit about kind of the Catholic history of the Illinois area. Is that right?
Yeah. Especially of kind of this area, the Great Lakes region, I guess I would say, the larger area around the entirety of the Great Lakes, which Illinois, and especially central Illinois, is a really important part of that history.
Now, you're an aspiring author. Is that how you phrase yourself?
No, I don't call myself that, but there is a the reason why we're talking about this, as I shared with you previously, I have a manuscript, I suppose, that I've written. I worked on this when I was in the seminary, so I have a church history degree, a master's degree in church history, but my particular interest is in American Catholic history. And so I've written a couple things, but this is kind of the extended work that I've written, and it's I guess like a book length work. It's not been published yet, so we'll see if it ever is. But it's on this topic of the early French explorers and missionary efforts in the Great Lakes region, as I said, but specifically in Illinois. So kind of focusing on the Diocese of Peoria. Of course, we're in the Diocese of Peoria, so that's the reason why we focus there. But it was nice. Why I focus there.
Mm-hmm. So I am originally from Alton, which is down by St. Louis. Sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up Catholic. I'm a convert. But here's some things that I think are going to lead into our conversation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a really big city down there named St. Louis.
Mm-hmm, sure.
There's a high school in Alton called Marquette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I didn't really start to even really put those things together as Catholic, probably because I wasn't Catholic, until I went to Ottawa.
Yep.
It was Ottawa a few years back, and there's a statue outside the church there of Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this must be a guy.
Yep.
Like, it wasn't just a high school down the road, you know, that. Yep. Growing up, that was kind of my, there's Marquette High School. And you know, a lot of times things are obviously named after people, and we don't start to put that together. But so that right there kind of just shows a lot of the French Catholic influence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how did that begin? I mean, were the French Catholics kind of the first settlers of Illinois?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty interesting. And even what you mentioned there is, there, you know, in Ottawa, the statue of Marquette is there because the high school there, it's now maybe pre-K through 12, I think, academy called Marquette Academy.
So oh, okay.
Two high schools in the state of Illinois named after Marquette. I think another one in Indiana.
There's also a big, I think it's a state park down in the Alton area or up the river road north of Alton, I think, called Marquette State Park.
Yeah, and along that river they have a large stone cross, which is erected, kind of commemorating the first French missionaries that came through that area right down there, as you're talking about, in Alton. So, so you were asking about what if the French were the first?
Yeah, like how did we get started here, Catholics?
Well, it's with most things historical, it's pretty complicated, and I suppose maybe not agreed upon by everyone. But essentially, like the Americas are discovered in 1492 by Christopher Columbus, and the Spaniards really kind of very quickly.
Who was Catholic? Christopher Columbus.
Christopher Columbus was Catholic, yes, and and all of the first explorers were Catholic and took priests along with them. It was just kind of an essential thing at the time. The culture, it was very Catholic. So if you were going on some expedition around the world, it was considered to be sort of a religious effort as well. And so the Spanish really established themselves very early on. Mexico City is developed, and Our Lady of Guadalupe has appeared in the 1530s already. And so maybe about 100 years after that, actually. So this is like pretty far after the development of Spanish colonial civilization, I guess, in the Americas, maybe around 1610 or so. I've got the information here, but I don't know the exact years. You know, like the French first show up in the Americas, and the Spanish had kind of come to like the lower regions of the Americas, Central America, the Caribbean, and definitely South America. And so the French, that area was already claimed by the Spanish. So they kind of look more to the north, and they end up entering into this huge bay of water, which they named the St. Lawrence Bay, which is, you know, of course, in the province of Quebec in Canada. And they named it after St. Lawrence because they discovered it on his feast day. And that body of water kind of empties into becomes like a smaller river, which is named the St. Lawrence River. And so that's kind of like the establishment of the French, maybe around 1615 is kind of when this first begins. And as the 17th century progresses, the French start colonizing that area of what is now Quebec, where Quebec City is, and then Montreal as well. And as they start to be established throughout the 17th century, we get to kind of the middle of the 17th century. Missionaries are kind of going out into what at the time was known as the Northwest. So anything outside of that part of Canada is the Northwest, like this great unknown, vast, not wasteland, but just kind of like a virgin territory that had not been explored. So it starts to be kind of explored in the 1630s, 40s, into the 50s. And then there's all these figures that kind of come around. And as this is happening, French Canada is developing in Quebec. And there's like all this great mystery about what lies beyond. One of the things that was kind of a mystical, something in there – in their mind, but they didn't know if it really existed or what it was this thing called the Great River. They'd heard about like this Great River, and even Hernando de Soto, the Spanish explorer, like decades before, had supposedly discovered this Great River and gone up the north of the Great River and even died and was buried in the waters of this supposed river. And so the French like really desired to see if they could maybe discover this river. They didn't know where it went to. They thought maybe it went to the Pacific. So eventually, you mentioned Marquette. In the year maybe 1672, I think, Father Marquette is a missionary, and at this point he's up in Wisconsin. And so he is assigned along with an explorer whose name is Louis Joliet to basically discover this river. And so they travel west. This begins in, I guess, 1673, this expedition. And basically they discover the Mississippi River, which is the Great River. It's, the word Mississippi comes from the two Algonquin words, which mean Great River, literally, Mississippi. So they discover this river. They travel down it in the summer of 1673, and they get about as far as Arkansas. They don't go all the way to the Gulf, but they discover the river, and then later they travel up north back to Canada to kind of report their findings. And I mean, there's so many details to this, but that's kind of the beginning of the French exploration of this area. And I guess why Father Marquette is an important person, but there are a lot of other figures after Father Marquette. He was the first priest to come through here, but really spent very little time in this area of central Illinois. Most of his ministry was in Wisconsin.
Okay. Which is where Marquette University is.
Yeah, and in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, yeah. So I wrote this work some years back, actually, and it's not been published yet, so we'll see if it ever gets published. But one of my goals was to bring out a lot of names that are not Marquette, a lot of other figures whose names have kind of been lost to history. Everybody knows Marquette because of what you mentioned already. His name is kind of everywhere. There's big city parks in the cities of Chicago and St. Louis. But there's lots of other names that are just kind of lost, who are kind of like the real heroes later on, who, as the French kind of started to colonize the river system in the interior of North America, really kind of gave of their lives, especially here in Illinois. So,
yeah,
I don't know if that gives you a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to hear some of those stories. I guess before we get into that, what kind of spurred your mm-hmm. passion for this research study? And was it, to your point, that you kind of started hearing some of these stories about folks that weren't Marquette and you kind of wanted to dig deeper? Mm-hmm. How did you get on the topic, I guess?
No, I didn't really know any of these stories of other figures until I started studying this. I like kind of just traveling around and looking at especially Catholic historical sites, just kind of like seeing where our faith came from. Like none of us have grown in faith on our own. Like it's all been handed down to us from someone else. Others have gone before us and brought us the Catholic faith and introduced us to the sacraments and everything. And so, especially when I was in the seminary, I studied in Maryland, which
was fairly Catholic.
It was the first colony that was kind of open to Catholics.
Yeah.
That changed very quickly after it was colonized. It didn't take very long, but it was originally
It was the only founding father that was Catholic, right? The original governor of Maryland, is that right?
So Charles Carroll of Carrollton was the only Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence. Is that the?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
yeah, and he's from Maryland. He was not able to hold public office because he was Catholic. But a distant relative of his, John Carroll, was the first bishop in the United States. So the Carroll family is kind of very important and prominent, and they were in Maryland. And so I studied in this area, and there's a lot of Catholic history, English-speaking Catholic history. So these are English-speaking Catholics in Maryland. And I just loved when I was out there traveling around and going to all of these sites, and it helped me to see like where my faith has come from, and it really just brought my Catholic faith alive for me. So I wanted – because of that, when I was in the seminary, I decided I wanted to study church history, and I really wanted to learn about American Catholic history. So I am very interested in the Spanish history of like the Southwest, Texas, California, Arizona, New Mexico, all this stuff. And I wanted to study that and kind of write on some of that. And there was a priest at the seminary, my advisor, who kind of said, you know what? I think you're from Illinois, and there's all of this like French history there, which a lot of people don't know about. I think you should study that instead. He encouraged me to do that because he knew I was from here. So that's how I got into this.
Gotcha.
Originally, I wanted to do this like study and look into more of the Spanish stuff, but he said, you know, I think you need to do this. And I said, okay, fine. And so, you know, I started looking at documents, and then the more I did that, I was studying in Maryland, but I'd come back here to Illinois during breaks from school and so forth, and I travel around and just see, as you just mentioned, there are little like indicators of this tremendous history dotted all over the landscape of this region. I mean, even you look at like the city of Detroit, right? There's the river that the city of Detroit is on. It's called the St. Clair River. Why is that? Because the Franciscan missionaries named it that. You know, there's a town around here called Hennepin, Illinois. Up, you mentioned Ottawa, a little west of Ottawa in LaSalle. Father Hennepin, he was a priest. I don't think that a lot of people know that. He also was the first European to go up to the area where the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, are currently located. So in Minnesota, the state where the county of those two cities is Hennepin County, named after him. You mentioned the city of St. Louis. Why is it named after the city of St. Louis? Well, because it was French there, and St. Louis was the king of France. And also when that was developed, Louis XIV was the king, so they kind of wanted to honor him as well. So that's kind of the significance of that. And the more you just kind of realize this stuff, you see that there are little indicators of the French history and their legacy all over the place. So
yeah, I think that even if you look today still, you know, if you look at kind of the Catholic density population percentages, mm-hmm. Illinois is, I think technically we run almost a third of the state population identifies them. You know, they might not be coming every Sunday, sure, but they identify themselves as Catholic, which I think mm-hmm. is still an extremely high percentage compared to, you know, Kentucky or Nebraska or, you know, maybe other areas.
Probably true, although those are Kentucky especially was a traditionally Catholic area.
Oh man, I should have picked it.
Well, that's all right. After the original Catholic settlers in Maryland were kind of persecuted, one of the primary places they went next was Kentucky. So actually, one of the original five dioceses that was created after the first diocese in the United States in Baltimore was the Diocese of Bardstown, which is now renamed because the city next to it is much bigger, Louisville. So that was one of the first Catholic centers in the United States, actually. So
now Southern Illinois, was it more German Catholic settlers, or has that kind of changed over the years?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's not my specialty. I really can't say. So, like, my knowledge really kind of ends when the establishment of the United States kind of became formal.
Okay.
And Illinois and this region became a part of the new American Republic in the 18th century, so
gotcha.
1700s.
So going back mm-hmm. to that time, I think that for most people today mm-hmm. – the idea of missionary work is,
sure.
I mean, we probably don't even really understand what missionary work used mm-hmm. to be. I mean, at this point, I think pretty much the vast majority of the world's population has at least have heard the name Jesus.
Probably true.
As compared to, you know, it's not the Acts of the Apostles. We're not going out to evangelize the gospel to people who have never heard about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, 200 years ago, as missionaries were coming, you know, mm-hmm. into what's now Illinois and the Americas,
sure.
You know, we didn't have Google, we didn't have, you know, all of these other ways to mm-hmm. do even evangelization.
Yeah.
So back to your research, kind of what did that missionary work look like? I mean, were they going out and...
Yeah, so initially when this all began, as I mentioned, in 1673, Father Marquette and Joliet go down the Mississippi River. But then after that, really in 1677, some other priests and explorers come later. And they wanted to explore and kind of claim this land, especially before the Spanish could get to it.
So yeah, absolutely.
That was a big part of this. And Illinois, by the way, is kind of like halfway along the American waterways between Quebec and New Orleans. New Orleans, Louisiana, became the other French colony. So that's the reason why this area was important, because it was like a way of connecting these two major French areas. Okay, so that's kind of the like secular aim of this, to like claim this land and to make it French. But in terms of the missionaries who went along with the explorers, they established all of these missions, all of these various places. So like the closest one to here would be at Peoria, and also the one up in LaSalle, kind of the – you mentioned the Ottawa area. So the mission originally started up there by Starved Rock, if you're familiar with that area. And then they moved down to Peoria, and then later to the St. Louis area, and then later further south to Kaskaskia, which is, you know, an old Illinois town which is almost non-existent now because of floods. But the mission church still exists there, named the Immaculate Conception. And so anyway, as they established all of these centers in these areas I'm mentioning, they were real missions, just like we can go today to a California and see the actual mission church. And that's kind of the way it was with the French. We don't really have these buildings anymore that they had for the most part. But they were primarily working and desiring to spread the faith among the native peoples who they encountered, at least the French operating in this time in the 1670s, 1680s, 1690s, and early 1700s. So the Native Americans in this area were a member of the larger Algonquin family of Native tribes. And so they spoke like an Algonquin-based language. Algonquin is one of like the larger families of tribes. So a whole lot of smaller names that you've probably heard of are members of the Algonquin family, like the Miami, the Fox, and the Illinois. And so then there's – within the Illinois, there's five smaller tribes named – I won't go over all the names, but a couple that you would recognize. The Peoria were one of the five tribes of the Illinois Nation who were a larger part of the larger Algonquin family. So the Peoria, the Kaskaskia, the Cahokia are kind of three of the five there.
I've been to the Cahokia Mountains.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so that was they were a member of the Illinois Nation, the Cahokia people. It's down by St. Louis, the Cahokia Mounds you mentioned. Anyway, so they sought to just kind of establish missionary work among those native tribes primarily. And they had a lot of success. I mean, there are recounts of Jesuits and Franciscans and maybe a couple diocesan priests, some Sulpicians, another religious community who operated in this area, converting a lot of the Native Americans, and a lot of them becoming very faithful Catholics and really being heroes of the faith, I think, in the early church. So there's only one canonized Native American saint, Saint Kateri Tekakwitha, but I think there are a lot of others who, you know, were very, very saintly. And in my work, there's a couple women who I kind of draw out. We don't even really know their names, but really have very similar stories to Saint Kateri, if anybody's familiar with her story. You know, just like really desired after they learned of just of the message of Christ, really desired to give their life for him. So it's really beautiful, and most of this is just not even known by anybody anymore. So I don't know if that answers that.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to after the break. Hopefully, we can get some of those stories going on different unknown Catholic missionaries from the French that we received back in the, mostly you said 1600s and 1700s. So I will look forward to that. Okay. You're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
The Pontiac Knights of Columbus Council 854 of St. Mary's Parish is involved with special masses, activities for youth and charities, Lenten fish fries, special Olympics, Tootsie Roll drives, and is a sponsor of Catholic Spirit Radio. As part of the largest Catholic fraternal service organization, the Knights make a positive difference in today's world. They meet every second Thursday and invite you to become a Brother Knight. Call 815-844-5820. That's 815-844-5820.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We have Father Joe with us from Epiphany, and we have been talking about some of the French missionaries, the French Catholic missionaries to the Illinois area. And so if you're just now tuning in, go back and listen to the podcast, or if it's Saturday at about 3:20, listen to us tomorrow at Sunday. Make sure you're here at 3 o'clock and you'll hear our first segment. Father Joe, again, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You had mentioned before the break that, you know, Father Marquette was a really well-known, and, and there was a couple other really well-known priests that had kind of done missionary work in the area. But you had also pointed out that there was a lot of kind of unknown folks. What are some of your favorite stories from kind of the unknown?
Well, I mean, I don't know all the details to rattle off the top of my head of some of these figures, but you were just asking during the break about maybe like if there are martyrs and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, there actually are a lot of martyrs. And in fact, there's a book written by a Franciscan priest, Father Marian Haben, called Heroes of the Cross, which details, and it's probably not even in print, I mean, anymore, but it details all of the martyrs of the Americas, or of North America, especially of the United States. And there are so many, Spanish and French. But in this part of the world, there's two martyrs in particular. At least I would describe one as a martyr. The other one, I think, died as a result of his efforts here, but probably not literally a martyr.
More of a natural death.
Yeah. And so the first one who we oftentimes classify as a martyr is Father Gabriel de la Ribord. And I guess I should back up and say that one of the primary things that I sought to bring out in this work that I've written or that I've worked on is that it is not just Jesuits who were the missionaries in North America, the French missionaries. A lot of times people think that. And even when I've told people that I've like written on this, I've studied it just as you did, and I'm not to knock on you or anything. This is like the natural thing in most people. They say, oh yeah, I've heard of Father Marquette.
Yeah.
And that's like the one name they know of. And Father Marquette, really, if you read his story, so I'm not going to go into it here, but he spent very little time in Illinois. He really was not, you know, a lengthy missionary in this area, as I said earlier, I think before the break.
Neil Armstrong didn't spend that much time on the moon either. But
nah, well, know, that's
when
true.
You're the first one, maybe that's what happened.
So Father Marquette established the Mission of the Immaculate Conception in the year 1675 in Utica, Illinois. And he began like formal missionary work in Illinois. And he stayed for 1 week. It was Holy Week 1675, and he was sick. And he had to get back to his mission, which is the mission of St. Ignatius or San Ignace at Michilimackinac or Mackinac Island in Michigan is where that's at now. He had to get back there because he was dying and so forth. He didn't actually make it back before he died. So he died en route.
Wow.
So he was only in Illinois for 1 week, and then all these other people came later.
That is a very short time.
It is a very short time, but he's nonetheless the one that everybody knows. So Father Gabriel de la Ribord, a couple of years later, 1678, they came through. He was a Franciscan Recollect, which is a specific kind of Franciscans that used to exist, not anymore, but it used to. And there were three Franciscan Recollects that came through this area. I mentioned Father Hennepin already. He was a Franciscan. Father Louis Hennepin, Father Zenobe Mambre was one of the other ones, and he was kind of like the hero of their group, at least in my mind. And then Father Gabriel de la Ribord, he was the superior of this group, the oldest of the three Franciscan friars to come through this area. And they came in the company of the explorer La Salle, after whom La Salle, Illinois, is named.
Sure.
So they came through here, and La Salle wanted to kind of do the same thing Father Marquette and Joliet did, which was discover the entirety of the Mississippi River, claim it all for France, and you know, in the process gain a lot of glory for having done so. And it didn't really exactly work out. But anyway, so there's these three Franciscan priests that come through, and it's very complicated what happened and everything. But essentially in the year 1680 in September, the French who were in this area got caught in the middle of this skirmish between the Iroquois, who had come from the east and were kind of seeking to exact all of this violence and kind of destroy and take over the lands of the Algonquin in the area. And so they got caught in kind of this battle between the Illinois, Algonquin, and the Iroquois, and you know, there's a lot of details, but essentially Father Gabriel de la Ribord was killed in the midst of this in Seneca, Illinois, on the riverbank outside of Seneca, Illinois.
Okay.
So that's kind of up towards the Chicago area, like Morris area around there between Ottawa and Morris.
Yeah. Beautiful Catholic church.
Yes, St. Patrick's in Seneca.
Yeah, I went to a – there was a priest that had a funeral there a few years back. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to blame.
Maybe Monsignor Boyle.
Yeah, Monsignor Boyle. Yep.
I wasn't able to make it, but I remember that. And there is a plaque outside of that church commemorating his martyrdom, which occurred there in September 1680. I mean, I don't know that I want to get into all the details, but he was tomahawked by a band of Kickapoo warriors who were another tribe of Native Americans in the area. And then he was scalped and his body was never recovered. And it was kind of in the midst of this chaos when the Iroquois were coming to – you know, to fight the Illinois.
That's a rough way to go out.
Yeah, it is a rough way to go out. There's in our cathedral in Peoria, there's a window in the side, not in the main body of the church, but in the as you walk up to the side chapel, the chapel of St. Thomas More, where all of the relics are at that our diocese has. There's a window there depicting Father Gabriel de Lavribord as a martyr.
Wow.
So not too many people know much about him. There's a lot more to his story, but. And even there's some question, I suppose, was he really a martyr? Did he die because of the faith? Did they kill him because he was Catholic? I mean, that's up for debate.
I mean, he was here as a missionary.
He was here as a missionary. He got caught up in this kind of skirmish, and he was there living among the Illinois, seeking to do ministry among them.
Yeah, I would classify that as martyr.
Yeah, and he fled in the midst of this, you know, and ended up dying because of it. So he would be the first. I guess the first Catholic, the first French priest to give his life to die here on Illinois soil. And then several years after that, the mission that Father Marquette started moved downriver to what is now Peoria. And there was a Jesuit priest later named Father Jacques Gravier. And he got caught up again in kind of this skirmish, very complicated thing. But he was he had a lot of success. He labored tremendously among the population there, among the Peoria population, at that mission, and had a lot of success in converting a lot of them, but not all of them. A lot of them were still very attached to kind of native and pagan practices, and you know, and so forth. Various supernatural beliefs and everything, and sometimes they thought that the priest or that the Christian religion was. I don't know, was responsible for illness or disease and everything. So there were some members of the Native community that were very opposed to the Christian missionaries and some who embraced it. Okay, so Father Gravier was kind of victimized because of that and was shot several times with arrows that kind of pierced him. And they were able to remove the arrows. And this, I think, was maybe in the year 1707, I want to say, or 1708. And he received some really necessary treatment. He had to. He escaped and was able to go downriver, actually making it all the way down to Louisiana, to the New Orleans area, and received some medical treatment. And then later he ended up going back to France for a brief while before coming back to the Americas. And he desired to go back to Illinois and continue his ministry among that tribe, who had like some of whom were responsible for him being severely wounded. And ultimately he ended up dying. And there's a lot of speculation, but people say it's because he never fully recovered from that incident and a lot of infection that had set in and everything, and he was never healthy after that. So again, it's not like he died right on the spot, but he's a real hero if we learn his story or if we read about him. Father Marquette is kind of regarded as the founder of the Illinois mission, and it's been said that that other priest I just mentioned, Father Jacques Gravier, was the father of the Illinois mission. So, and somebody who really spent several years among the Native population here. And truly labored and gave of himself fully. And then even after he was injured, wanted to come back and continue to minister to these people. He was so passionate about bringing the gospel to the tribes who he had encountered here. So he's really a hero, and it kind of inspires me in my faith for sure.
Were there any French female missionaries that were kind of working with the priests at the time? Or
yeah, not that I'm aware of. You know, I think there were some French religious sisters in both New Orleans and in Quebec. The first religious community was the Ursuline Sisters. And their founder, at least in Quebec, the superior was a woman named I don't know any French, so but I can't say her name in French. But
I took French for 4 years.
Yeah, did you?
I don't know any French either.
So her name is Marie of the Incarnation, and she's a saint in Quebec. But there weren't really any women, to my knowledge, that really traveled west into this area known as the Northwest, into kind of the hinterlands of the Americas. That was kind of, I guess, at the time seen as I suppose, a task for the men. But there were among the men who traveled, the French missionaries. There were always, a couple priests always, but largely it was explorers, like somebody who led the effort. So like Duluth, after whom Duluth, Minnesota is named, he was an explorer. LaSalle, I already mentioned him. There's a couple others as well. But so one of the men who went along with these explorers, they had different skills and everything, maybe to build ships, or maybe they were carpenters or masons or something. And so they needed these people to go to establish these missions as well. One of them was a guy named Michael Acco, and his story is somewhat common because there weren't French women really that traveled into this area with the men. And so there were several French men who ended up marrying or having relationships with the native women. And Michael Acco was one of them. He married.
That's why they had the priest with them.
To
hopefully marry him.
Maybe. Yeah,
or confess
sure.
their sins.
Yeah, I think confess their sins largely, and maybe to keep them from doing too
hopefully,
much damage.
Yeah, from sinning again.
And that's actually one of the things we can read the accounts of some of the missionaries at this time. They commented on how a lot of times it was like the native population who had embraced Catholicism who like really were passionate about their faith, which is so common when we see converts so often are really passionate about their faith, and the people who have been Catholic all along are kind of like, okay, I could care less, you know? And that oftentimes was the case with some of these French men who followed along as explorers, one of whom is this guy I'm mentioning, Michael Acco. And he ended up marrying the daughter of the Illinois chief, and her name begins with an A, and it's got, 45 letters, so I can't hardly pronounce it, but she became a Christian. When she became a Christian, she took the name Mary.
Much easier to pronounce.
Much easier to pronounce. But anyway, she was very, very devout. And before Michael Acco married her, she wanted to – they didn't have like a religious community or a convent that she could join. But she desired not to ever be married and to give her life fully for God. And she worked a lot with the aforementioned Father Gravier. But Michael Acco came along and wanted to marry her, and so eventually she agreed to that. And he was not a very faithful person. He was one of these kind of companions of the explorers and was really kind of seen as a real wild man in his earlier days, and was like really converted back to the faith of his childhood through his marriage with this native woman who really like helped him to be a very, very devout Catholic. And so it's really an amazing story. And he'd be somebody who's not really well known at all, but a French explorer who was kind of like, a symbol of debauchery or something, or living a pretty debased life, but then was kind of like brought back to Christ and to the sacraments by his marriage to this native woman. And he even writes that, like he says that it's because of like her, that she was like my angel in disguise, So it's really a beautiful story.
Yeah. I'm curious, just as a point, I'm sure that as the missionaries came, there were probably some people in the Native American tribes that, mm-hmm. that were kind of already, I guess, maybe predisposed to the idea of Catholicism or religion.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church teaches that through natural law, there's mm-hmm. things that we can come to know on our own mm-hmm. about the existence of God. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. When you study the initial encounter of any of these missionaries with native tribes, you never find a native tribe that's encountered who didn't have some deep belief in God. A lot of times, as you just said, this like predisposition, maybe it wasn't the case with like every individual person that when they heard the message of Christ, they thought, oh my goodness, that's true.
Right.
But they all were like open to hearing about this foreigner's idea of God.
Yeah.
And they all understood what that meant naturally because they had a belief in God. Even I'm not sure which language it was. I think probably one of the Algonquin languages, but the word Manitou, which we might hear that word. There's a town around here called mm-hmm. Manitou. That was there's also a couple islands in Lake Michigan called I think Little Manitou and Big Manitou Island or something. That was the word for like this great spirit, I think in an Algonquin language, which basically referred to God. So they had this like great belief in a God who was the creator, who kind of ruled everything. And so a lot of them are very open to receiving this message, of learning about Jesus who was God, who came to live among us and died on the cross. And that was one of the first things that the missionaries would do when they would establish these missions too. Like the formal establishment of a mission, it was established when they erected the mission cross. So there's like this humongous cross in all these villages, and they in each village they'll say like how big it was, and it probably varied – on the specific
similar
mission.
To the one down on 57. Maybe not
yeah,
quite down, that big.
Yeah. No. I mean, similar. Yeah. It was in wood, but like erected maybe like 30 feet tall or something. And when that was put up, like the mission had been established.
Wow.
And there's accounts of like whenever that happened, like the whole community would gather together and like music and dancing and stuff. And they might not have all been Christians, but it meant something, even if they didn't fully understand it. Like they might not have known everything, but in their heart, I think they knew that this symbolized something profound, which I think maybe one of the issues today is a lot of people have kind of lost that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you kind of, you know, for present day, you know, mm-hmm. just from the kind of the missionary spirit and evangelization, you know, what should we maybe look to as we look at, you know, these historical figures and, mm-hmm. you know, some of them gave their lives. Yeah. They gave their lives whether they passed or not. I mean, you know, it was an effort yeah. of time and passion and everything else. And you know, how do we as Catholic Christians take that forward and really recognize that, you know, even though, again, that we have the Google and we have the, you know, the YouTube or whatever, that, you know, we're still called to evangelize our neighbors and our families and our friends, and but then also ourselves, you know, that we're called to, you know, deeper understanding of our faith and deeper mm-hmm. prayer lives and all those types of things. Before we get into that, I'll let you think about it during the break. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5. Father Joe is with us. Talking a lot about the historical settling of the Illinois area by French missionary Catholics. So if you're just now tuning in, come back after break, but go to Apple, iTunes, or Podbean and listen to the first two segments. Again, Father Joe, thank you for being with us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back. Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
The 40 Days for Life campaign is in full swing here in Bloomington Normal.
Each day through November 3rd from 7 in the morning until 7 at night, people of all ages stand along Veterans Parkway praying for life. Life from conception through natural death.
Thanks to the people standing and praying, and for the positive support expressed by drivers who beep, wave, pray, or give thumbs up as they pass.
Won't you help by becoming a prayer warrior on Veterans Parkway?
This is a national 40-day effort, and we are making a difference.
Each and every day, we need you, your family, and your friends to show up in support of the sanctity of life.
Participate in prayer on Veterans Parkway anytime from now through November 3rd. 1 hour is all we ask.
Sign up at 40daysforlife.com or check Facebook at 40 Days for Life, Blono IL, or call 309-825-0495.
40 Days for Life.
Join in prayer on Veterans Parkway through November 3rd.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real-life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is The Ideal Christian Steward. What would it cost you in terms of personal sacrifice? Have you ever given thought as to what it would take in terms of personal sacrifice to bring yourself closer to God? Becoming a good steward partially entails stepping out of ourselves in order to be properly aligned with God's gifts for us. But stepping away from our selfishness can be difficult. What would you have to sacrifice to be an exemplary Christian steward? What would you have to take a closer look at? Your desire to make money? Seek power? Examine a friendship? Is what you are listening and watching contrary of Christian stewardship? Use the gifts God has given you for the good of the church, and to do so tirelessly. We need only to be reminded of the apostles and the sacrifices they gladly made to carry out the mission of our church, to bring Christ to people and people to Christ. Take a close look at what you can accomplish when you seek to serve God through the gifts He has given you, and when you unconditionally make sacrifices to share your gifts with others, you will begin to be open to God's good graces of love, peace, sharing, and caring for you. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
One truth, one voice, one church, one body, one soul, one cross, one Savior, on one station, the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Thank you.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. Father Joe is with us. Again, thank you, Father Joe, for being with us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You can catch Father Joe at Epiphanies on most weekdays and on the weekends.
Well, sometimes. You know, I'm also a Central Catholic, so I split my time.
Oh, okay.
A lot, but I may or may not be there if you come.
So. All right. Well, you know, if you're not there, Father Eric will be there. So
probably.
They'll still be in good hands. So, Father Joe is with us. Again, thank you for being with us. If you're just now tuning in, we've been having a conversation about the historical French missionaries to the Illinois area. So go back and listen to us on Apple iTunes or on Podbean. Or again, if it's Saturday, just tune in tomorrow at 3 o'clock on Sunday and you can catch us again. So we talked a lot about some of the, you know, some of the martyrs and the missionaries and, you know, these folks, whether they died of natural causes or they were, you know, technically martyred, they gave their lives to an idea that spreading the gospel to new areas was worthy of their entire life, right? And to their work, to their passion, their blood and their sweat and their tears, and for some of them, you know, the ultimate sacrifice. Yeah. How do we take that kind of that historical perspective of our faith and translate it into our day to day, you know, today? I mean, I think for the vast majority of Catholics in the United States, when was the last time we evangelized someone? Sure. You know, when was the last time someone asked us about our faith? And, you know, were we prepared to give them an answer? And then two, did we have the, you know, maybe the courage to give them the answer?
Yeah, well, I'll say a couple things in response to that, maybe formed by two things that come to my mind immediately. And I think, at least for me personally, I look at the example of the saints, you know, and I'm like truly inspired by them. And that's kind of the reason why I've been very interested in studying, especially the local history, the Catholic history right here, like where I'm from. Because I see that there are people who, as you said, like gave up their life right here, and they inspire me. You know, they encourage me to be more faithful, to give more. As I see what these priests, what these lay people, what these people who are true disciples of Christ, what they gave. There's of course popular phrase these days that we need to be missionary disciples. And I think it's true. You know, some people say, oh, that's sort of like a, I don't know, just like a pop phrase or whatever. But
we're just mash up words.
But it's true, you know, like we need to be disciples of the Lord. We need to be missionary, to be sent out. One of the reasons why I think a lot of – there's just a lot of evil things so often we can just complain and think, oh, the world is falling apart. The church is falling apart maybe. And I think it starts with us. Like we have to take our faith seriously. It can't just be some you know, just a little part of my life, something maybe I do when it's convenient. Maybe I go to Mass on Sunday if I don't have something else going on. I remember – in 2015, I went to Rome. It was the year I was ordained a priest. I went with my seminary class. We were deacons. We went to the catacombs of St. Callistus. And the catacombs of St. Callistus are run by the Salesian community in Rome. So you can go in there and go to this underground cemetery, the burial place where a lot of the early Christians were martyred. Not all of them, but a lot of these early Christians were killed for their faith. And we were given a tour by this Filipino brother. And I liked what he said so much, I wrote it down in this little book I just pulled out of my pocket. So this is from four and a half years ago now. This Filipino lay brother, I don't know his name, I didn't write that down, but he told us when he was telling us the story of the early martyrs and how you know, the faith ended up spreading after the martyrs gave their life, and it really you know, was like the source of the spreading of our faith. People who were so willing to give of their life because it meant so much to them. It doesn't happen so much anymore. And he says, we don't anymore feel the challenge of the faith. That was like the line he told me. And it really struck me. We don't anymore feel the challenge of the faith. Not everyone, but too many people don't. They don't see that, like, it means something to be a Christian. We're called to do something with it, to go out, spread our faith, because we think it's true. And so that's what they did in the early church. That's how the church became strong, because a lot of people embraced their Christian identity and realized it meant something, that they're called to something, and they lived it out. And then we saw this right here in this area. I mentioned just a few of these kind of like heroes who came through this area and first brought the Christian faith, the Catholic teaching to central Illinois, to the Great Lakes region. And they felt the challenge of the faith. They knew that they can't just keep this to themselves. They have to go out, spread the message. And so ultimately we see the spread of the Catholic faith in the United States. And, you know, it's a big church now. There's a lot of people. And it all started here with this little – just like a few little seeds that were planted here and there. And so obviously, you know, you're talking about in the secular age, I think the faith kind of dwindling a little bit among some. And so for those of us who are faithful still, I think we have to see ourselves as people who need to replant the seed, you know, and just reinvigorate the church. And like I said, it starts with us. I was looking here in the book. I was trying to find a little passage I wanted to read from, but I didn't find it easily. But I'm just finishing this book by Archbishop Charles Chaput from Philadelphia called Strangers in a Strange Land, and really speaks about that as well, just this need for us to really embrace our Christian identity and to be missionary disciples, to be encouraged, to be invigorated by the witness of those who have gone before us. So I think it's very important, and that's what we have to do. I think you actually – there's a commercial you run on this station, and Archbishop Chaput says something very similar in this book. He says something like, be a saint. What else is there? You know, and I think that's what we have to do. We have to take it seriously. So if you're listening, maybe think about it. What can I do to live my life a little bit more faithfully today? It's just day by day, you know, and if we all take it seriously, I think we could actually do something good in our church and in our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously in the gospel it says, you know, that it's harder for a rich man to make it into heaven than a poor one. And regardless of the amount of money that's in your bank account, if you're listening to this radio station in McLean, Illinois, McLean County, you would be classified in the world as rich.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were talking a little bit earlier about suffering and just, you know, we have it pretty good. Even for those of us who have it bad right now, you know, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to your point about missionaries, you know, hundreds of years ago, or obviously the early Christians, you know, a couple thousand years ago, they didn't have it as good as us, and and probably that was a benefit to them. I mean, it, you know, it probably made the sacrifice of choosing their faith that much more real. Whereas today, I think a lot of times we get kind of complacent in our faith, or you know, we look at it and we go, well, there's always tomorrow, or there's you know, and I think sometimes we just get to the point where we try to make things in life more complicated than they need to be. And so I think that for a lot of people, becoming a saint, going back to your point, to become a saint seems like it's impossible. Yeah. Like that you know, like we look at the saints a lot of times as like superheroes in our faith. And yet I think so I think for the day-to-day person sometimes it becomes, you know, like, well, I'm not Mother Teresa living in Calcutta taking care of the poor. I'm in Bloomington, Illinois. So it's not even possible. And I think that, you know, there's if we just get back to the basics, I mean, the black and white of our faith, you know, going to church on a regular basis, you know, praying, you know, giving of our time and our talent and our treasure. I mean, there's very basic things that just every day we should we should do.
Yeah. Well, we should be encouraged by the witness of the saints, but it's very true. Archbishop Fulton Sheen, maybe some people have heard this quote before, but he says that because, of course, we read the lives of the saints in these books, and as you said, they just seem like these people that we can't possibly relate to. They were perfect in life, you know, and but that's not really the reality. The saints were human beings, and they were sinners as well, and he says, but we usually don't read too much about that. Fulton Sheen says that if the lives of the saints had both their vices and their virtues, not just their virtues, that the books about them would be twice as long. Cause it seems like the books about the saints just tell, you know, that they were perfect, and it makes us seem as if we can't possibly be like them. But in fact, they were sinners as well, but they fought against that and didn't allow the sin and the evil within them to lead their life. They pushed against that and, you know, ultimately conquered the evil by their heroic virtue, which they developed.
The story of the saints is that of perseverance, really.
Yes, truly. And even like we're talking about kind of the early French missionaries and explorers here. I mean, there's some of them, I could give you just some names, but there's some of them that like didn't get along with each other. There were like internal disputes among some of the priests, among the Jesuits, and among the first diocesan priests that came from the seminary in Quebec and Canada that came through this area. They were like disputing over who had the right territory or who had the rights to the territory and all this sort of stuff. But in the end, I mean, they recognized their mutual fraternity that they shared with one another, that they were Christians, that they were each kind of attempting to accomplish the same things. And so they were imperfect, just as we're imperfect, but they did great things despite that, you know. And, you know, despite their differences, we're able to kind of settle some quarrels and work together to bring about the kingdom. And I think that's something. It's, I don't know, it seems like a lot of people today don't want to work together. They, you know, they just want to, you know, do battle with one another, yeah, on Twitter or whatever. You know,
yeah,
just,
I mean, it
just becomes so childish. It can. So.
And to your point, I mean, it absolutely blows my mind. And Twitter is a great example of it. It's like you'll see people that, like, you know, they block each other, whatever, they get in a fight. And it's like, you guys believe 99.9% of the same thing.
Yeah.
And yet there's like this one obscure, you know, and we do it in religion, we do it in politics, we do it just with our families. I mean, it's like, we're all in this together. We, you know, we all have some, you know, for the most part, we share some common goals and ideas and struggles. And that we'll let the like 5% of the things we disagree on divide us, you know?
It's true, but, you know, it comes from the devil. It's not an exact translation, but the Greek word for diablo, diabolos, is kind of, it's sometimes defined as to divide. Literally means like to throw apart, diabolos. But that's where we get the word diabolic. And so the devil is the one who seeks division, who creates division and wants to divide even over these little things, or, you know, so it just, I mean, the evil one is very active and seeking to destroy us. So
absolutely. Amen to that. We like to put our guests on the hot seat and do the gospel reflection for this Sunday. Have you started preparing your homily yet?
You know, at Epiphany, we alternate whether or not we're preaching. And I preached last weekend, so preaching this week. So to be perfectly honest with you, I've not looked. I do look at the gospel, of course, in advance.
Sure.
Not looked at it. And we also have a guest priest coming in to do a mission appeal this week. So I'm not preaching. It's the gospel of Luke, I can tell you that.
Yes,
so,
it is. Yeah.
So let's hear what it is.
All right.
It follows along after last week. Must be Luke 18 or 17,
Yep, Luke 18, verses 1 through 8.
Boy, put me on the hot seat.
Yeah. Jesus told his disciples a parable about the necessity for them to pray always without becoming weary. He said, "There was a judge in a certain town who neither feared God nor respected any human being. And a widow in that town used to come to him and say, 'Render a just decision for me against my adversary.' For a long time, the judge was unwilling. But eventually he thought, 'While it is true that I neither fear God nor respect any human being, because this widow keeps bothering me, I shall deliver a just decision for her, lest she finally come and strike me.' The Lord said, 'Pay attention to what the dishonest judge says. Will not God then secure the rights of his chosen ones who call out to him day and night? Will he be slow to answer them? I tell you, he will see to it that justice is done for them speedily. But when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?'" Luke chapter 18. I don't know that I've ever heard that one before.
You've heard it three years ago.
Well, yeah.
For sure. You're the same gospel readings every three
That's
years.
True, but it doesn't jump out at me as kind of, you know, the common ones.
Yeah, well.
So but I really like
it. You want my 2 cents on it off the top of my head?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if I were preaching on it, I would spend a couple hours in prayer just reflecting on this, which may or may not result in me having anything useful to say, but that's what I would do. But just hearing you recite it there, and I opened it up here, and I'm looking at the text myself. The beginning of it kind of struck me. Then he told them a parable about the necessity for them to pray always without becoming weary. We were talking about that a little bit earlier, right? Like, despite the struggles, the obstacles in our life, we have to be faithful. You know, that's where we get the energy that we need, and the strength comes from God and comes from a life of prayer. Maybe we do become weary, humanly speaking, but especially when we're weary, we have to go to him and allow him to fill us back up. And then at the end of it, I tell you, he will see to it that justice is done for them speedily, those who don't honor God properly. But when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? Bishop Bruskowitz, he's the retired bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska, but I was not present for this, but I heard some talks he gave at a retreat. And it was kind of centered around that one question that Jesus asked right there. When the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? Interesting question for us to reflect upon. And I think for each person who's listening right now, for myself, for each of us to think about that, when the Son of Man comes, how about let's just make it very personal. When the Son of Man comes, when he enters into your own life, maybe when he comes to take you from this life, will he find faith in you? Will he say that this person was faithful? This person followed my commands. This person desired to serve me and to serve others, serve me through others, by serving others. How am I doing in that regard? What can I do to improve? Will the Son of Man, how does he look at me right now? Does he see me as a faithful person? Just some reflections, maybe some things for us to think about, and just kind of a little bit of a challenge and also a good examination of conscience. How does God see me? Not how do I see myself. How does God see me? Does he see me as a faithful person, someone who's, as we're talking about earlier, desiring to be a missionary disciple?
Yeah, I mean, eventually that's all we can control, right, is whether or not we have faith. And we can't we can't control our family. We can't control our friends or society or or our priest or our deacon. Like, you know, sometimes we get caught up worrying about way too many people. And the question really is, you know, Jesus eventually is going to come for each one of us. And is he going to find faith in us? I love that. I wonder, the first thing that stuck out at me, and maybe you have an idea, when it says that he told them a parable about the necessity for them to pray always without becoming weary, the first thing I thought of was in the garden when he rebukes them for not even being able to stay awake, you know, in prayer for an hour. Yeah. Is this where are we at time wise compared to that? Or, I mean, is this early on
from
in
the,
his
from the passion?
When
the passion comes about.
Yeah,
well,
any idea off the top? I mean.
Want to talk to a scripture scholar, you should call Father Matt Deptulo over here. He used to be in town here for a brief while. Now he's in Chillicothe, but he is truly a scripture scholar. But this is towards the end of the Gospel of Luke, so he enters into his passion just a couple of chapters later.
Yeah, so we have to be getting close.
Yeah, he's getting close.
I always look at, you know, back to our conversation on saints, right? I mean, the disciples. They had every advantage, you know, you would think of. They lived with Jesus. They saw everything and how easily they fall. I mean, again, if this is, you know, not too far, just time frame wise from here sits the Son of God telling them, like, this is why things are important. This is why it's necessary that you pray always without becoming weary, you know, and then, I mean, there's some time removed, but. And when they're in the garden for the passion and, you know, they all fall asleep. That was just the first thing that jumped out at me was Jesus keeps telling them and they just keep not doing it.
Yeah. And hopefully that gives us some hope because you're right. We keep seeing in the scriptures, they just keep not doing it, as you say, but eventually they did.
Yeah.
And they all gave their life for it. So hopefully that gives us some hope too, as I talked about earlier, Fulton Sheen's thing about the lives of the saints would be twice as long if we had their vices as well. And actually, in the scriptures, we do see a lot of the vices of their various figures. But
yeah, they couldn't get along a lot of times.
Yeah, right, exactly. A lot of division, right? Lot of activity of the devil there. But in the end, they firmly believed in this message, and they did everything to promote it. So I think when God came for each of them, he did find faith in them. So we have our imperfections and hopefully he'll find the faith in us as well.
Absolutely. Well, Father Joe, I so appreciate you coming and being with us.
Thank you.
Hopefully, Catholic Spirit Radio gives your writing the platform that it needs. You know, hopefully there's a publisher out there listening that's like, man, that was really cool.
So, I think I got to do some more work on it. We'll see.
All right.
I don't know if it'll ever happen or not.
Well, it was very
honestly,
interesting.
Honestly, with my assignments and everything, I just don't have that much time to devote to this. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure it's a labor of love.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us. Again, Father Joe is with us. If you're just now tuning in, you missed an entire show, so go back to Apple, iTunes, or Podbean and listen to the podcast. This has been Catholic Spirit Radio, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on 89.5.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.